Welcome to Drive Time GP, a podcast exclusively for healthcare professionals. Tackling Hypertension Head On mini-series. Part 6, a common underlying cause of hypertension that GPs need to screen for.
Hi, my name is Olta Skitte. I'm Professor of Cardiovascular Medicine at UNSW here in Sydney and also at the George Institute for Global Health. And in this episode forms part of our podcast series on how to significantly improve how you manage your patients with hypertension. And today I'm excited to have a conversation about a common but under-recognized form of hypertension that you will very likely encounter in your practice, primary aldosteronism. GPs are often taught that hormonal causes of hypertension are rare, and this includes primary aldo. However, the new 2024 European Society of Cardiology hypertension guidelines now suggest testing for primary aldo in all new diagnosed adults with hypertension. So, what has changed? With us to talk through this topic is an international expert in this field, June Yang. June is the head of the Endocrine Hypertension Research Group at the Hudson Institute of Medical Research, an associate professor within the Department of Medicine at Monash Uni, and a consultant endocrinologist at Monash Health in Victoria. Welcome, June.
Hi, Alta. So lovely to speak with you.
Great. I think this is really an exciting topic, so let's dig into it. So, June, before we focus specifically on primary aldo, can you perhaps recap what the role of aldosterone is in blood pressure elevation, but on a physiological level? Why is aldosterone important in hypertension? And why don't first-line antihypertensives actually target aldosterone?
So aldosterone is a hormone produced by the adrenal glands, and its main job is to regulate salt and water balance in the body. So typically, when there is low blood pressure, it triggers the kidneys to produce renin, which then stimulates this increase in angiotensin II and then the increase in aldosterone. And aldosterone then tells the kidneys to hold on to the sodium and water, which then restores the blood pressure. But in primary aldosteronism, the aldosterone release is sort of out of control, and so the blood pressure continues to increase despite this feedback on renin production. And so typical first-line blood pressure drugs, such as ACE inhibitors, angiotensin II receptor blockers, they're not helpful because they're not really directly acting on stopping aldosterone production or blocking aldosterone activity. And in contrast, there are drugs which specifically block aldosterone, and they are the most effective in people with primary aldosteronism.
So those primary aldo blockers, like spironolactone, they are not first-line treatment, right?
So spironolactone is not a first-line blood pressure-lowering treatment that would be prescribed by doctors in general, but for people with primary aldosteronism, it should be first-line treatment.
Right, yeah, that makes sense. So what are the new developments in the field of treatment?
Well, there are actually a lot of new aldosterone-blocking medications coming out. So one that we've had for a long time, eplerenone, that's been available for many years. Unfortunately, it's not on the PBS, so it's a bit expensive, but it doesn't have a lot of the side effects that spironolactone may cause. And then there are the newer aldosterone blocking agents, which haven't actually been tested in patients with primary aldosteronism. They should be helpful. And then finally, there are the new drugs which block aldosterone synthase, called the aldosterone synthase inhibitors. It's a very exciting new development because they're literally treating the root cause of the problem by blocking aldosterone production. But again, they haven't been tested in people with primary aldosteronism.
I think an important aspect to speak about is how common primary aldosteronism really is. Can you update us on the latest data on this and whether you think we should screen for it more regularly?
So when I first started doing this research on primary aldosteronism as a junior doctor, I was always taught that it's a rare condition. And yet through literature research, even back, 10, 15 years ago, it was clear that it was not uncommon. And over the years, there has been more prevalence studies done. And we're finding that about 1 in 7 to 1 in 10 patients with even newly diagnosed hypertension actually can have a diagnosis of primary aldosteronism. So that's far more than what used to be taught, which was 0.1% of people with hypertension. And so it has become the most common hormonal cause of hypertension and should be screened for, preferably in the primary care setting, because that's where most patients with hypertension go to seek medical care.
But what are the causes of the adrenal glands to actually produce this excess of aldosterone?
Primary aldosteronism can be caused by either overproduction of aldosterone from one or both adrenal glands. When the cause is one adrenal gland, it's often a tumour that contains mutations in ion channels, and that leads to uncontrolled production of aldosterone. So recent studies published have revealed that, you know, over 95% of these tumours have an identifiable type of mutation. On the other hand, when the aldosterone excess is coming from both adrenal glands, it is difficult to tell what the underlying problem is because we don't do surgery to remove both adrenal glands. There is some limited research to show that there may be aldosterone-producing cell clusters or micronodules in both adrenal glands that may be the cause of the problem. And they have also been shown to contain mutations in ion channels. However, it is unclear why so many people in the population would have these mutations that's leading to excess aldosterone production.
So what is important, of course, of how we manage hypertension in primary care and also primary aldo is looking at hypertension guidelines. In 2024, the European Society of Cardiology released the new hypertension guidelines, which have changed from before. What I'm wondering is, how are these new guidelines different from what the 2016 Australian Hypertension Guidelines say regarding primary aldo screening?
Okay, so I'm really excited about the new European Society of Cardiology guidelines because, for once, they actually suggest testing for primary aldosteronism at the start of the hypertension journey instead of at the end. So in the past, primary aldosteronism screening was only recommended in people with hard-to-control hypertension or hypertension with high-risk features such as low potassium. However, this secondary screening was often forgotten once the initial tests were done. Furthermore, the longer you leave this disease, the worse the blood pressure and the more medications these patients end up taking. So then almost all of the blood pressure medications can affect aldosterone renin levels, making the screening test result hard to interpret. So now that the new guidelines recommend testing for primary aldosteronism as a first-line test, it's really going to help a lot of patients reach the diagnosis earlier and without the interference of medications that can cause false negative results, and also stops them from suffering years of preventable end organ damage.
In practical terms, if you think you detect 1 in 10 patients by initial screening, that would have a massive impact if you can treat them from the outset correctly. I wonder how many GPs in Australia actually do include screening for primary aldo in their hypertension patients, and how difficult is it? It appears to have a lot of hospital admissions and so on. Or can you break that down a bit for us?
At a primary care level, our data comes from a big primary care study called the BEACH study that was from about 15, 20 years ago now. And at the time, it was shown that primary aldosteronism was very rarely tested for. The aldosterone test was ordered only 66 times over that 10-year study period, which is not very often. And yet the screening test is actually pretty easy to do. You just have to order a blood test to measure aldosterone and renin. Aldosterone is generally normal or high, and that negative feedback suppresses renin, and so the ratio of aldosterone to renin is elevated. Now, once you have this abnormal screening test, there are a few ways to approach further investigations. These patients can then undergo an aldosterone suppression test, such as a saline infusion test, just to see if their aldosterone production really is out of control or whether it's suppressible by the saline. And then if it's not suppressible by saline, then we go on to do an adrenal CT and adrenal vein sampling, which is a procedure where blood is collected from both adrenal veins to work out if aldosterone is coming from one or both sides. If aldosterone is coming from one side, then you can actually offer that person surgery to potentially cure the disease once and for all. But a simpler and more pragmatic approach would be to just offer an aldosterone blocking medication after finding a positive screening test, unless there are features to suggest that this patient has unilateral one-sided disease. I think we're still working on better algorithms to try and predict which patients need to go down the adrenal vein sampling pathway and which patients can just go straight onto medical treatment. And I think in the near future, we will be able to streamline this process a lot more and offer medical treatment perhaps directly in the primary care setting without having to refer so many patients to tertiary care for further testing.
So do you think that GPs in Australia should already be starting screening for PA with the original diagnosis of hypertension?
Oh, yes, absolutely. When they are treatment naive, their blood test result is less likely to be confounded by the effect of antihypertensive medications. Most of the commonly used antihypertensive medications can cause a false negative result. And so the new guidelines are recommending that you just test for it as a first line. That way you don't forget. And you just test it in every person with hypertension. And the test can be done in just about all the major pathology labs around Australia. So there's no real barriers to ordering or doing the test.
Yeah, that sounds actually quite easy. I mean, as per other blood tests, you just additionally add those two additional markers. So that's not a massive burden on the GP or the patient if they're going to do a blood sample anyway for your general lipid test, et cetera, right?
Absolutely. You can combine them. It's better to check aldosterone renin in the morning, you know, preferably around 2 hours after getting up. But really, if you're going to do a fasting glucose, lipids, that time is quite appropriate for measuring aldosterone renin as well.
And 1 in 7 is quite remarkable. I think it seems quite common, more common than was anticipated, as you mentioned before. So it's certainly worth just ticking those extra boxes and making sure that the patient receives more specific treatment if needed. But obviously in our GP practices, there are hundreds of thousands of patients who are already receiving treatment for high blood pressure. How should GPs change that? Can they screen for them then? And what are the implications? I know there are obviously many patients that seem to have resistant hypertension and may have secondary hypertension. Can you give us some examples on how that could be implemented?
Yes, that's a really good question, because being on many antihypertensive medications is one of the reasons why doctors find it hard to screen these patients, as they're not familiar with the interpretation of the results. So we always say there are different ways to approach this. If it's difficult or unsafe to stop or switch any of the current antihypertensive medications, for example, if they had heart failure and required their ACE inhibitor, then we would just order the blood test on these medications and interpret the result accordingly. So if a patient was on, say, ACE inhibitor, ARB or a diuretic, and their renin concentration is still low, well, that's highly suspicious for primary aldosteronism, because these drugs should cause renin concentration to be very high. Now, for patients who are relatively well and can switch off their antihypertensive medications, you can either just withdraw the medication completely before testing again in 4 to 6 weeks, or you can switch to non-interfering antihypertensive medications, such as verapamil, prazosin, moxonidine, which do not tend to affect aldosterone and renin as much. So you can easily interpret the aldosterone-renin ratio. And just as an example, my dad actually had what's considered resistant hypertension. He was taking 4 drugs, all the popular ones, your ACE inhibitor, a calcium channel blocker, a diuretic, a beta blocker. And his blood pressure was always around 140, 150. And he was told that that's just the way it was and that sometimes it was okay. However, when I got into this area, I decided to screen him. Initially, the aldosterone-renin ratio was normal. So then I switched all his medications. And then, surprise, surprise, the aldosterone-renin ratio became abnormal. Subsequently, after a few more tests, he received a diagnosis of primary aldosteronism caused by bilateral adrenal disease. And now he takes only 1/4 of a tablet of spironolactone and achieving excellent blood pressure control, which at, you know, age 78, having a blood pressure of 130 on 70 is really very good.
And is one of the aspects that GPs would be looking out for in the typical blood test is also hypokalemia, right?
Yeah, that's right. And that's always been considered a hallmark feature of primary aldosteronism. And yet, about 50 to 70% of the patients with primary aldosteronism actually have normal potassium. When a patient has hypertension and low potassium, that is definitely a highly likely case of primary aldosteronism. But even if they don't have low potassium, I would still consider testing them for primary aldosteronism.
One thing I was wondering, June, is that you mentioned that obviously you have to, in some instances, send patients to tertiary care, but it's often unclear where GPs can refer these patients. Is it well known where these centres are?
In Victoria, we have an endocrine hypertension service based at Hudson Institute and Monash Health. In Perth, Brisbane, they also have fairly dedicated centres to look after primary aldosteronism. In other states, all the endocrinology departments would look after primary aldosteronism, as well as private endocrinologists. In New South Wales, I think nephrologists also look after primary aldosteronism. So there is a broad range of specialists who can look after people with this condition.
But what is not clear for me is why do patients with PA have such a high risk of heart disease, stroke, kidney disease, more so than others with similar degrees of essential hypertension?
Yeah, this is an important point, Alta, because aldosterone actually affects more than just the blood pressure, in that the receptors for aldosterone, called the mineralocorticoid receptors, are actually expressed in a wide range of tissues beyond the kidneys. So in particular, these receptors are present throughout the cardiovascular system and can cause tissue inflammation and fibrosis if they're inappropriately activated. And therefore, in primary aldosteronism, that excess aldosterone can make blood vessels stiffer, less flexible, make the heart muscles thicker, or left ventricular hypertrophy, and these changes lead to the higher risk of heart and kidney disease over time. And that's why I don't consider primary aldosteronism to be just a type of high blood pressure. It is really a cardiovascular risk factor above and beyond hypertension. The earlier you detect this condition, the less cardiovascular, renal, and organ damage will accumulate over time. So offering early diagnosis, targeted treatment will prevent that end organ damage from occurring.
Thanks, June. That makes a lot of sense. Those physiological mechanisms are often underestimated for aldosterone. So how do you think can screening for primary aldosterone contribute to improving blood pressure control?
By diagnosing a sizable proportion of patients with the root cause of their hypertension, we're able to then offer them targeted treatment, which will not only improve their blood pressure on fewer medications, it will also reduce their overall cardiovascular risk profile. And we have already done health economic analysis to show that it's cost effective to screen right from the beginning of diagnosis of hypertension.
The screening in itself is not expensive and also not the treatment, it's just to do it.
That's right. The screening test is highly cost effective. And even if you cannot afford to undergo all subsequent investigations, at least you can offer that targeted medical treatment, which is still beneficial.
Thank you, June, for taking us through primary aldosteronism. I think we've covered a broad range of topics, but can you maybe summarise in a nutshell the take-home messages for our GPs before we finish off?
Yes, absolutely. The key messages are probably that primary aldosteronism really is very common, and look for it by ordering a blood test for aldosterone and renin in patients with hypertension. And remember that conventional antihypertensive drugs do not work well for primary aldosteronism. So that targeted treatment of primary aldosteronism with either medications that block aldosterone activity or surgery to remove the source of excess aldosterone will not only lower blood pressure, but also reduce the risk of heart and kidney disease. So all in all, it's a disease worth testing for.
Thank you so much, June. I think this has been super interesting, and we are very fortunate to have had you here. Yeah, you can answer any question on primary aldo clearly. So thank you for this interesting discussion, and I really hope our GPs also found this information very useful. Please also download the roadmap of the Hypertension Task Force, which was published recently in the Medical Journal of Australia, which is freely available from our website.
All the resources mentioned in this interview are available on the Drive Time Radio website. This series is supported by an unrestricted educational grant from Servier and created independently by Drive Time Radio Australia in collaboration with the host and guest experts. Produced in April 2025. The views expressed are those of the individual speakers and may not represent those of the supporting organisation or Drive Time Radio Australia Proprietary Limited.